This will be the final act, because when Stephen Jones kicks, we'll be in the 80th minute, and that will be that. It's come down to this. All the dreams and all the hopes and all the aspirations of this Irish Grand Slam effort on Stephen Jones making or not making this kick. Has it? Has not made it. Touchdown. And it's Ireland's day.
Yes.
61 years of waiting. How sweet this moment is for Irish sport and for Irish rugby and for a group of players who quite simply believed.
And if ever a team dug deep and if ever a team deserved what they're getting out there now, it's this group, what they've given Irish rugby over the last 10 years.
That primal scream, I think, from Tony Ward, my favourite moment in the entire 2009 Six Nations. That was, of course, the Grand Slam game, Wales against Ireland in 09. It was the Ronan O'Gara drop goal. It was the Stephen Jones failed penalty effort. It was Ireland's first slam since 1948, and this is the Classic Game Club. You can tweet us and Off the Ball if you've got any suggestions for future episodes. All previous episodes available on youtube.com/offtheball. The format is basic. We get three of us in studio, we watch a game back, and then we talk about it. It's like a book club except for matches. Joe Malloy, you're very welcome.
It's like a book club except for matches. Brilliant.
That's what it is.
Oh, that's a great idea.
You were watching it at like 2 a.m. last night?
Oh my God, I was cursing you last night because I was home obviously 10 after the show, an hour or two to do nothing, and then I got to bed around midnight and I thought, oh my God, I have to watch the 2009 Ireland-Wales match.
And it's very different watching it back. Neil Tracy, you're very welcome.
How are you?
Where were you watching this at the time, live, when it was happening?
Boring one, just at home.
Mm.
Same.
With the family.
The more important the game.
I vaguely recall there was a couple of other family members over maybe for dinner, but it was about as dull as you can get, just sitting at home in the living room.
Mm.
The bigger the game, the more likely I am to have been alone
yeah,
in the living room, door locked. I want to hear the commentary.
Were you not working for Newstalk at the stage?
I was working on the lunchtime show with Eamon Keane Monday to Friday.
Okay, so the big sports break was yet to come.
Correct.
We will get in. Joe's going to do a play-by-play breakdown of RT's coverage of this game throughout today's episode. No, probably not. Just to set the context but before we get properly into it, today, of course, it's pretty simple. Ireland going for the Grand Slam had beaten France first up. That was probably their tightest encounter for the whole thing. Had won in Italy, had beaten England, actually by a point in Croke Park, but that was a late England try that day, and won by 7 at Murrayfield. Obviously, 3 Triple Crowns in the Six Nations era up until this point. Had only won 1 Grand Slam ever. That was, of course, in 1948, and had never won a championship in the Six Nations era, that is. Bernard Dunne, of course, fighting for a world title on this very day. So it was a huge day for Irish sport. Here is how Ryan Nugent summed up all this context before the game kicked off.
Welcome to the cauldron that is the Millennium Stadium. The hopes, dreams, expectations of a nation are on the shoulders of these 22 young men and their coaching staff. Will it be a burden on them or buoy them? The next 2 hours or so will tell us everything we need to know. They have travelled in huge numbers. Many could not get a ticket and are in the pubs and clubs of Cardiff looking on, waiting, watching and willing. And I have to tell you, after a beautiful day in Cardiff, the atmosphere has built and built and built and is truly something unique.
He goes on to say, be prepared to have your nerve endings put through a blender, which is a great line. Mm. It was a peak Ryan Nugent at this point.
Yeah.
Well, no, peak Ryan Nugent was, say, about 45 minutes into the game. Yeah. Like, that's the line everyone remembers him for.
I love Dave McIntyre, but I must say, I also thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed having some Ryan Nugent washing over me last night.
Oh, God.
Clipped says our ad for this. He's absolutely phenomenal. Like, it's great. Like, the Tony Ward's voice breaking and all that at the end is great, but it is Tommy Bowe. It is peak Ryan Nugent. He does, like, it's actually very informative listening to him at the start, because on YouTube, if you were watching it back on the same stream that we were, you don't actually get to see the kind of pre-match preamble, and you get to see Ireland on the pitch on their own for quite an amount of time. He informs us they're actually in the same dressing room that Munster were in for 06, and these are all the kind of different elements coming into it. And then we see Prince William coming out, and we see Mary McAleese coming out, and we talk about people who have aged quite a lot. Prince William is the most aged man.
Fine head of hair.
He's one of the most aged men, I think,
it's fair to say. Tough decade on William.
Very, very tough decade.
So there's a few things there. I mean, you think not much changes over time. So even in Ryle's scene set, 22 young men as opposed to 23. Yeah. That jarred. I was like, hang on. When did that change again exactly? Yeah. So 22 young men. And then now when you watch games at the Principality as it is now, the two teams walk from opposite dressing rooms, meet and stand at the door and go out together. Mm. So I'm not even sure when that's changed. But Ireland were on the pitch for a good 5 minutes before Wales eventually came out. So it's amazing just the little things that change. Wales had green socks as well.
Yeah, I was thinking that. They've had them down the years every now and again. Yeah.
Right.
There's one other part that's important for the context in all of this, because you're watching the game and there's a few schmozzles, I think it's fair to say, early in the game. 50 seconds in. I'd actually 40 seconds in here in front of me. So Ryan Jones trips Rog. Yeah. Like, it's blatant. Donegal O'Callaghan comes over to sort him out. Mm. And then we hear, I'm not sure was this after the Martin Williams versus Dennis Leamy skirmish, or maybe it was beforehand, but Ryan Lugent delivers this line. Warren Gatland's comments during the week doing nothing for diplomatic relations between the two sides. Now, you could copy and paste that line to every single Wales versus Ireland game. So I just did a quick look back to see what exactly were these comments from Warren Gatland. He said, recent Welsh experiences against Ireland at international and provincial level have not always been the greatest. Of all the teams in the Six Nations, the Welsh players dislike the Irish the most, and they're all very motivated to be playing on Sunday. Ireland are playing very much like Munster, closing down and taking 3 points, and has been reasonably successful so far. But at some stage, you have to take more risks and play some rugby. Step up Dennis Leamy to actually make a couple of offloads in this game. We will see how their players handle pressure. They talked themselves up before playing New Zealand last November and performed poorly. It is a massive game, and we are at home. Mm. That is stirring the pot nicely for a game of huge stakes.
I mean, he had a point. That was how Ireland had played in that Six Nations. The French tries were amazing, and he slip and that step and all that. But in the main, my predominant memory from that Six Nations is Brian O'Driscoll scoring tries from a metre out.
Yeah.
As ultimately happened in this game, the England game, there was an intercept against Italy. Like that was Brian O'Driscoll back, actually.
The Italy game, I think, was completely... The Italy game was just thrash him. Italy were poor at the time. They ran through him. But the Scotland game the week before, the Wales one, that was like 22-15. Yeah. That was the kind of... The pressure starting to set in of, okay, two more wins for a Grand Slam. Yeah. You know you should beat Scotland away. And they just kind of got through it.
They rested a few set players up as well for that Scottish
match. Yeah, a couple of them.
But, Gatland was obviously stirring the pot, but it wasn't a million miles off in terms of how that Irish team went about their business under Kidney that year. It wasn't champagne rugby. And
I have to say, actually, when they got their two tries in the start of the second half against Wales, that was really good. They actually like really turned it on for 10, 15 minutes. And you could see Roger was like chipping little balls over into each corner and stuff like that. And that's how the two tries came about. And it was so much different to the opening half of the game.
My overriding feeling from the opening half was just how tense Ireland were.
Yes.
And I heard Brian O'Driscoll talking very recently. He did a podcast about winning the Grand Slam. So it tied in nicely with this. And he talked about how tense they were and they didn't enjoy themselves or even relax a little bit more so until the second half and go out and try and have some fun. But even... Yeah, you know, it was a few things. Tomás O'Leary, first kickoff, ball goes ruck. Tomás O'Leary, box kick. You know,
how many box kicks were in the game?
None after that.
There were four in total.
Oh, right. Still low.
Okay.
And we'll get back to that later on. We're talking about trends and stuff.
Sorry,
like
yes. There's a strict format here. I'm breaking.
Get into it. No, we all broke it with the excitement of 2009 and the excitement of Ryan Lugent. First one, moment of the match. I'm going to start this off. Marcus Horn making that incredible steal when Wales are bearing down on the Irish goal. Like, obviously, it's before Jones's drop goal, so they would eventually take the lead anyway. I just feel that 7 points is on at that point for Wales. I don't know how he did it. Maybe Marcus Horn doesn't know how he did it. Maybe it was a complete fluke, but it was still the moment that I thought to myself, right, OK, the ball is bouncing in Ireland's favour now. This is a huge... That was a coin toss of a moment, and it just happened to come up heads for Ireland at that point. I just think that could have gone anywhere. And for me, that was the moment of the match. That was the Grand Slam through the fingers, had Wales managed to get two more clean phases.
Yeah.
He would have gone over the line.
He was someone actually in that match that I was, when I was looking back and I was thinking, God, he was actually a brilliant player.
Unbelievable.
Mm. He was brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant in that game specifically, but overall it made me kind of think, do you know what, he was class. And he was just kind of someone you've forgotten about maybe in recent years.
You've gone for a Stephen Jones mishap as your moment of the match.
Yeah. Basically, just after Jones had scored his drop goal with 4 minutes to go, Ireland kick off, Wales collect it just outside the 22, pass it back into Jones in the 22, and he just hoofs it out on the full. Now, by that point, by that stage, they'd changed the law around. So if you brought it back in and kicked it down the full, it's back to where it's kicked from. So it meant that rather than having a line out probably on the halfway line, Ireland were 10 metres from the Wales line with 4 minutes to go, having just gone behind and like five, six phases later working in field, and O'Gara puts a drop goal over. And I was just wondering, like, if it was a few years earlier, if he kicked out in the full and he was allowed to bring it back in and kick it out on the full and there was a line up on the halfway line, how much harder would Ireland have had to work to get up into that drop goal territory?
Yeah, this was a tricky one because quite clearly the moment of the match is either Rodgers' drop goal or Stephen Jones' penalty.
Sure.
None of us wanted to pick that. There were a few things that jumped out at me. The camera increasingly cutting to Jack Kyle.
Yeah.
Such a big part of that day. If you don't mention that, that was part of the fabric of that day. Mm-hmm. Jack Kyle with his son in the crowd. And Kyle had been on RTE radio for the France game to mark the Grand Slam that year. I'm not sure why it was that year. Specifically, they did it with him because it wasn't some anniversary as such. But he had been on the RTE coverage that year with Hook and Pope in studio talking. It was great. So the country were more aware of Jack Kyle than they might otherwise have been. So at this stage in the championship, Jack Kyle was an old familiar friend. You know, there's Jack. He's back again.
He's been with us on the journey the last six, seven weeks.
So that was really lovely. And then if I had to pick another enduring moment which jumped out at me last night, it's not quite from the match, but I'm cheating. So it is Shane Jennings, not in the 22, but like he's such a great fella. And he's running onto the pitch and he goes over to Paddy Wallace. And Wallace, like...
The look on his face.
Captures sport. captures sport.
What happens?
Well, Paddy Wallace has given away the penalty that could have ruined the day.
Yeah.
Jennings is running onto the pitch in his tracksuit and he goes over to Wallace. And everybody is running around celebrating. They're losing their minds. And Wallace is like this. And Jennings comes over and Wallace just looks up at him and goes...
This little grin. It's
like, I've got away with this. Like, you wouldn't believe... And Jenny's almost pushing and going, oh, come on, it doesn't matter now. And he's just like, oh, my God. I think he had delayed shock.
Yeah.
And for me,
brilliant.
It captures like, geez, we talk about fine margins. Paddy Wallace would still be talked about today as the man who ruined the Grand Slam.
Yes.
And that was dawning on him. And he was the most relieved man I've ever seen. So in a way, that kind of lingered with me last night watching it.
Those post-match reactions are very interesting. Whenever sports people come in and have a conversation here, they talk about the 10 minutes afterwards being the moment. That is what you play for. And I've never seen it more evident than on those Irish players' faces. Just in pure ecstasy for those 10 minutes, you've got Ronan O'Gara lip-syncing Galway Girl, you've got Rob Kearney spraying champagne. Brian O'Driscoll, I know he smiles a lot, but the biggest smile I've ever seen on his face at the end. This was just pure and utter joy from all these players.
There was Ronan O'Driscoll just after the full-time whistle. And he's, I don't know, one of his teammates is walking up towards him and he has his kind of hands in the air.
Pain.
He's like trying so hard to be happy and smile, but you can actually see he is just exhausted.
Yeah. It looks like a man in crack. He's got this kind of,
like, he wants to be happy so much, he's just absolutely wrecked.
Yeah, that was very striking.
Yeah.
He wasn't smiling, he was grimacing.
Yeah. He picked up the Man of the Match award. He was the official RBS Six Nations Man of the Match. We do a thing here in the show called Secret Man of the Match, somebody who kind of flew under the radar with a great performance. I've gone for Rob Kearney. I thought Rob Kearney was really good.
Really? I was about to have a bit of a nibble at Rob.
You go first then.
Well, I just thought every time he got the ball, it was like it was the things we would now criticise a 34-year-old Rob Kearney for doing. Every time he got the ball, he ran 50 metres, booted in the air, and generally too far away from himself to chase it down and catch it. Now, he perfected this skill, as we know.
Yeah.
And there was a period where literally he was almost gathering 50, 60% of these kicks that he kicked for himself. But in this game, bar one, and it was a knock-on more so they gave it to him, he just got the ball, booted it, and chased after it with no hope of getting possession back. And I found this increasingly frustrating as it went on.
I think it was probably the one that I typed in Rob Kearney into my Secret Man of the Match category. And he did miss a tackle as well after following up one of those, and he did get taken off. So this I've gone for a very, very secret Man of the Match. So secret, he's probably the 15th most likely Irish player to have got it. I don't know, I thought, like, I think Wales were trying to actually adopt a similar tactic, which is why I went for him.
Okay.
And booting down balls on top of the Irish back three, and Kearney was just cleaning up. There was no way they were getting through. Like, after he goes off, I think Does Rog even drop deep to get one? Perhaps, I don't even know, but like this was a tactic from Wales. Like we'll get into the huge differences in the types of kick. Mm. The ball went to boot countless times in this match, and the fullbacks were under severe pressure, and I thought Rob Kearney stood up well.
Okay, in Rob's defence, briefly, because I feel like I've unnecessarily had a go at him there, to be fair, I'm taking his safety under the high ball and catching every single high ball for granted. That's kind of how good he is.
True.
I dismissed that instantly. I was like, okay, of course he got the ball. He's Rob Kearney.
Yeah,
so maybe. To be fair, it may be less secret then.
Who would you have gone for?
In the opening 15 minutes, Tomás O'Leary was brilliant, I thought. He's putting in tackles. He put down a Welsh player behind their own try line. There was a fantastic kick into the corner for touch. He was setting a tempo. Like the first 10 minutes, Ireland's tempo was fantastic. And I thought, bloody hell, Tomás O'Leary. Because I always remember Peter Stringer as passing to Rog. And maybe in my head, I thought, who started that game at scrum half? Couldn't quite remember. So in the opening 10, 15 minutes, I thought Tomás O'Leary really caught my eye. And O'Driscoll in that podcast said that he was talking to O'Leary in the bar after the French game. And O'Leary was part of the new breed. And O'Leary had half joked with with O'Driscoll. And O'Driscoll said he always stuck in his head. He was like, man, you dopes have been at this for 10 years. Like, let's just win a Grand Slam already. And he was part of that new breed, which is something worth mentioning. I'll get to my man of the match in 1 second. O'Leary, Kearney, Heaslip, Luke Fitzgerald was a kid. Mm. The other really exciting thing about that time was we had had the O'Driscoll-Darcy generation in 2000, and that had been after a decade where Ireland had averaged about just under one win in the Five Nations per season. And this golden generation arrived, and that's how they were perceived, a golden generation. So 2009 is very exciting because it actually turns out, hang on, there's either a second golden generation coming right after them, or maybe we're getting the hang of producing players.
Yeah.
And that was incredibly exciting because we'd always looked at that initial batch, Horgan, Darcy, O'Driscoll, O'Connell, Rog. Like, what's going to happen when they go? And they were like getting 28, 29 at that stage. And then Luke Fitzgerald, a line. Heaslip, a line that summer. Kearney, a line that summer. So they're all there. So I was going to say O'Leary, and then at the death, Paul O'Connell was kind of extraordinary.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
it was not. This is not a secret man of the match.
No,
O'Driscoll got it. Could have been O'Connell. He stole line-outs. He hit every ruck. He was just there constantly. So
they took the Welsh line-out apart.
They did. Yeah,
they stole about 7 or 8 balls from.
Yeah.
Was that down to O'Connell being amazing or Wales being crap at the line-out?
I'd say it was down to Ireland at the time. I'm trying to remember. Like it always felt like around that time, Ireland's big thing. They were so good at the line-out, on their own ball, on your ball as well. But yeah, that jumped out. It was at a huge amount of steals.
You've gone for a curveball at man of the match?
Yeah, initially I was trying to choose, was it either Marcus Horne or Dennis Leamy? I thought both of them were absolutely brilliant. Particularly with Leamy coming on after 5 minutes and stuff like that.
For Ferris.
Yeah. And in the end, I actually just scrapped that and I went for Declan Kidney / the coaches.
Cop out.
Very hipster.
Because I actually think at half time, I kind of mentioned it there a few minutes ago, right at the start of the second half, they changed up completely. The way they were kicking, they started just dropping balls into each corner constantly at the start of the second half. And that led to both tries. The first one, it was right after the start of the second half. Ireland probably kicked loads in the first half, got it out to Rog, and they decided to run wide with it straight away. They brought in Tommy Bow. And I think Wales had kind of dropped back a little because they were expecting a kick, and Tommy Bow found a gap, shot up through, back out to O'Gara just outside the 22, and he just dinked one over into the far left corner, and it was actually a perfect kick. Mark Jones caught it just as he was running out into touch. Mm. Ireland line out 5 metres out. Eventually then they go through their phases. Brian O'Driscoll gets over for the first try. Then kickoff comes, they go through a couple of phases, whatever. I think it's off a scrum then, out to O'Gara. Shane Williams, I would say, was expecting Ireland to go out wide again and swing it out to Tommy Bow like they'd done 2 minutes earlier. Mm. So he actually shoots up a little bit, and then O'Gara drops one over into that corner, which sits up for Tommy Bow, and away he goes and
Ryle does his thing.
And there actually were a handful of other times after that as well where I think they kind of realised the size difference between Tommy Bow and Shane Williams and just started dropping kicks over there. into that little corner up into the air and disrupted him so much.
Gavin Henson went to full back, did he?
Yeah, because Lee Byrne got injured.
Yeah, so Henson, this fell into Rodgers' playbook perfectly. We have a guy who's not totally au fait with full back, and Rodgers started picking him off.
Yeah.
But, like, it is amazing.
So that's why I was going for the coaches there, like, spotting something like that.
Or did Rodgers spot it? Maybe Rodgers is your man of the match. Who, by the way, you forget how much lads just ran at Rodgers.
Yeah.
And he had a tough time of it in the first half.
Yeah.
Really tough time of it. So for him to actually put in that performance in the second half, where I think he finds like his best touch, it's his best clearance kick at the very least, around 60, 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Obviously, the drop goal, most people would be rattled beyond return come half time after the performance he put in the first half. But they do pick up in commentary. The 10-12 channel, according to Tony Ward, is what Ireland were weak at the time. That's where the Welsh team were going to run at them. And I think they did that successfully on a couple of occasions in midfield, anyway, in the first half. So that's our secret men of the match, our most jarring moments then, or most jarring things that we picked up on from the game. For me, like, I think we've kind of touched on this already, it's a few box kicks except for like the very first thing they do. You counted four of them.
Three for Ireland, one for Wales.
It's three more than I thought that they were, but I suppose there was no more for Ireland after the first
one. Did you miss them?
Absolutely not.
No.
But like the thing is, so like we talk about those kicks in behind Shane Williams. If Shane Williams was a foot taller, they're still effective kicks in behind the defence. Well, Shane Williams' height was nothing to do with it.
It's exactly what you see Beauden Barrett doing so much now. New Zealand use it so often, just chipping kicks over into those little corners and getting people kind of running behind themselves to try catch it.
Like, that would be such an effective technique for Ireland right now. So, no is the answer to your question. No, I brought a big wide smile to my face seeing Rob Kearney booting it up into the air and unsuccessfully chasing down the ball. It also brought a lot of glee to my heart. So that's it for me. Tomás O'Leary, just kind of never really would have thought of him as a great kicking scrum half, because Conor Murray is so renowned for it, but as a box kicker. So that kind of jarred at me a little bit, but in a very positive way.
Mm.
You've got a slew of things.
I've got quite a few.
Nothing massively jarred with me, I have to say. I was quite struck when on 35 minutes, Ryle Nugent said, and now we'd like to welcome viewers of the 6-1 News.
I said that as well to you as well. I used to love that.
Like, what?
Do you not remember that being a thing?
Oh, such a little titillation that we are, like, the 6-1 viewers are with us. This is serious stuff. Ryle sat up, gave a little summary.
Well, they always do that.
Did they?
Yeah. I said it when I sent over our little kind of checklist of notes, that I actually just remember that being a thing when I was younger. That for the big games, depending on what time they're on, obviously, they'd cross over live to check in on the match.
Do you know, I know it from the 6-1.
And I just always felt it as a nice thing.
It was a lovely thing.
Yeah.
Actually, it was a real sense of national togetherness and importance.
Yeah.
Even the 6-1 viewers who hate sport, you're now being forced to come over and watch some of this for a minute or two.
Nugent has to do like a 2-minute report within the actual live commentary.
Does it brilliantly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and like, there's play on in the 22.
Yeah.
And he's holding it together. Well, Ireland have dominated at line-out. Might score a try here. And,
you don't get an idea, though, at what point does he hand back?
That's the key question.
Because they always just eventually would have to.
There's no hand back.
Yeah.
There's no hand back. Now, I think it was when he summed up the score again, maybe. But that was kind of lovely. Like, because they could easily get Tracy Pigott on the touchline to do a live, well, you join us here, blah, 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 blah. But there was something kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. I know, I do remember that was something they did a lot for big games.
What have you got, Neil? Give us a bullet point list of all the things that jarred with you.
Right, so I'll do kicking first, because you'd mentioned that as well. We spoke about how it was just four boxes.
It's going to be like the Golden Carrick speech.
It wasn't just... But
are these from your personal stats you took at the time?
No.
Okay.
I went back on it yesterday. The actual quantity of kicking itself and the type of it. First of all, like, less box kicking. There was just so much aimless, booted up to the 22.
Yeah.
And we'll chase it up again. The quantity of it, though, was crazy. Ireland kicked 40 times in that game.
How does that compare to modern standards?
I like that you asked that, Joe. But Ireland kicked 40 times in that game. Wales kicked 26.
Context is everything.
So last season, when they met in the Six Nations, Ireland kicked 18 times.
18?
18.
There you go.
Isn't that interesting?
Ireland's average, I would say, from what I can remember in the last year or so, I'd say they're kicking 20 to 25 times a game. In that Six Nations in 2009, Ireland kicked 40 times against Wales, 37 against Scotland, 42 against England, 40 against France, and just 17 against Italy, because
Italy are shite.
They didn't really need to.
That's
so the average 35 kicks a game. during that Six Nations, as opposed to 21, I think, in the last Six Nations.
If you said to people now, what's one of the ills of the Irish game, they would say, oh, just kicking the ball all the time.
It's just different types of it.
Mm. You were the star of Classic Game Club, I think it's fair to say. Nobody's gone to this level of depth after watching a game back. Keep these coming.
And if you add it up between the two teams in each game, of Ireland's games in the Six Nations, there were more than 60 kicks in all but one of them. There were 79 kicks between Ireland and England. It was like 42 to like 37 or something.
To be fair,
Croke Park, in fairness. Yeah.
I did on YouTube hit the old double tap 15 seconds a good bit when it was kick tennis.
yeah. There was so much of that.
Good function, actually. I didn't know about that.
And then
2 a.m. you got to do everything.
Yeah. Just the long clearing kicks. So then another one, the number of high tackles. Tackles that start out normal enough. Do you know those ones that would get penalised now where you just slide up and you end up around the neck? Dozens of them. Absolutely dozens of them.
That's right. That didn't jump out.
Just kind of sliding up and ending up, a forearm kind of going up around the neck and the face. The letting them know you're there kind of ones. And then the tackle as well. This kind of comes back to is there a section on like the legacy or something like that?
Yeah, but let's get into the tackle thing here then.
Hemmed him in with the rules.
we're moving over to sliding doors here a little bit.
So, do you know the way now, when there's a tackle, they get to the ground, the tackler has to do the hands in the air, the clear release.
Yeah.
You didn't really have to do that at the time.
I found it very stodgy around the breakdown.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy that.
That's because you could just go to ground with him and get back to your feet without actually really releasing.
That's been a good change.
Yeah.
I actually, rugby has improved since then.
Because what it did was, when they didn't necessarily change the law, they just decided they were going to interpret it much more differently because it was a complete mess. And Ireland were so good at making it a mess. You'd have someone like David Wallace who'd tackle someone, bring him to ground, and he would just stay bound on the ball and get back up onto his feet. And it meant that for the referee coming in, when they changed the way they were looking at it, it meant that, first of all, the referee had to look and see, has the tackler released, then has the ball carrier released.
And do you agree it's better now? It's a better
statistical? Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. So.
But that's because of this rule. The reason why there's more kicking is because of that very rule. Like, people didn't want to get caught in the breakdown.
Yeah.
Like, the defender had the advantage there, whereas that rule took it away from the defender quite substantially.
Yeah, so basically in 2010, the new interpretation meant tacklers had to show the daylight, basically, hands up in the air, and then you can go back in. So the tackler became the first thing the referee was looking at it. Ireland actually challenged the interpretation of that in the summer of 2010.
Yeah, Les Kiss.
No, not even the choke tackle.
Oh.
Yeah, about the ruck itself. They requested a ruling relating to the law from...
Oh, they legally
from World Rugby.
It.
Not legally challenged. Basically, countries every now and again, they could ask for a clarification on a law.
Right.
But they would have to do it publicly. This is all up on World Rugby's website. You can see them submitting their reasons for why they think X, Y and Z. So the clarification in the end from World Rugby was players who are attached to the player who is tackled and who remains on their feet must release the player and the ball and then play the ball in accordance with law.
You lead a rock and roll life, my friend.
I know, yeah. I brought this chat down a dark, dark path.
I didn't know about that, though. I didn't know that all those changes came so soon after, because it does, if you're looking at something very, very closely, in and around the breakdown, it looks very, very different. But I didn't realise it happened so quickly afterwards.
I think it was the year or so before they had those experimental law variations, and then they brought in a few of them permanently and decided they weren't actually going to tweak with any laws until after the next World Cup. But what they were going to do with some things was just kind of clarify the interpretation of what exactly is happening. Mm. So there were a few of those where countries would kind of challenge a rule or challenge a law and get it clarified and stuff like that. And that was one. And that's the way we have it now, which is far, far better.
Some top answers there from Neil Tracy.
Top answers is right, which brings us nicely on to trending, which has kind of turned into most jarring as well, but the leftovers of the most jarring segment, I guess. For me, the thing that's trending is Brian O'Driscoll. I know he was man of the match in the award.
Not World Player of the Year there.
I don't know. One of the most complete performances I've seen. And we got swept away. I'll hold my hands up. Personally, I got swept away with this idea of the 2018 Grand Slam team saying there's no way O'Nine were as good as them. And then you watch O'Driscoll and you watch O'Connell and it's like there's no way that you can substantially say that this O'Nine generation or that this 18 generation was just better because they'd won a few more championships in the year before that under Schmidt's early years and all that. I think it's very, very close and it's probably a conversation for another day, but on second viewing, O'Connell was unstoppable in the line-out. O'Driscoll was unstoppable everywhere. In the breakdown, he picks up Shanklin at one point and drives him backwards. So for me, he's trending there. As you say, World Player of the Year, should have been. And Alan Wynne-Jones, I think he had a mullet. We've got an image of that here.
Yeah, he was very young looking.
Very much on trend for me. That is a mullet, right? I googled Alan Wynne-Jones mullet and it came up with no results. So maybe I'm the first person to unearth this. If I am, well, the mullet, trending in 2009.
The mullet was trending around that
again. I had one.
Did you?
A little bit. Oh. By accident, really. I kind of found myself one day after a particularly bad haircut with a mullet. I don't know, it didn't look well.
Did you ask for the bad haircut?
It didn't look well. Was the least needed add-on there of all time.
Lads, do we have anything else here for trends that you noticed?
Yeah, substitutions. You'd mentioned it like a 22-man game. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that they didn't really use substitutions as like the finishers.
Not a coordinated thing. 50 minutes, get them off. Yeah.
It was, you use your substitutes if you needed to make a substitution.
Yeah, that's a big change.
Like, both Ireland and Wales ended the game with their starting props on the pitch. I saw John Hayes had to take a brief break for a blood sub and Tom Cork came on. Yeah. But other than that, Wales' two starting props started and finished the game. Ireland's two starting props started and finished the game. Ireland only used 5 of their 7 subs. Wales only used 3 of their 7 subs.
Wow. That's an incredible change.
If you look at now, like, how often do you see a game in the professional era where all 8 subs aren't used?
It'd be a sack of defense.
Like, Ireland needed 25 last weekend.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. Right, we're moving on to the next segment, which is reaction, which is summed up here beautifully, I think, by Brian O'Driscoll speaking to, I can't remember who.
I think it was Sonia McLaughlin.
Sonia McLaughlin, you're right. Here's what he had to say afterwards.
The amount of things going through the head during the week, permutations, combinations, what could be, what might be, what is, you know. It feels so good, you know. Like, for it to go down to that at the end, honestly, it would have broken my heart, but... I don't know, I'm so proud of the boys today and you know, through the Six Nations, took a lot of flack over the last 18 months and to come back and be Grand Slam champions, first in 61 years. I'm just so delighted.
A dramatic drop goal from Ronan O'Gara. He's had some turbulent times in his career. How proud for that man?
The boy's a wonder, you know. He's the strength of character, I don't know too many. Some of the words that he said today were just phenomenal. He's just, you know, you want to win with them, you want to play well with them, and twice 2 European Cup winners' medals and now a Grand Slam medal.
It's a worn old cliche, but what on earth did Declan Kidney say to you at half time? Because you came out a team possessed, scored 2 quick tries, and it really was the turning point.
He said we were, you know, we're still completely in it. We just hadn't converted any of our pressure into points, and you know, we did that. We came out firing and got 2 quick tries, and then, you know, we stopped playing a bit, but. You couldn't have asked for, you know, a more dramatic end than that. The drop goal and then for Steve to miss a penalty by, you know, a yard. I don't know, it was just a phenomenal, phenomenal feeling.
The thing I took from that was what he said about Ronan O'Gara. The born winner thing, had won 2 European Cups, has now won a Grand Slam. That was the Leinster view of Munster players at the time. Yeah. The 2 medals that they've got for Europe. That 2009 turns into this seminal moment for not only Brian O'Driscoll but all his Leinster teammates, because we know what happens next.
Even the starting team, 8 Munster players, 5 Leinster, 1 Ulster. And 1 Osprey, because you were allowed to do that at the time.
Yeah.
That wasn't an issue.
I must confess, that was the first year I really started to warm to the Leinster bunch. I had had a...
Oh, when they won, was it?
No, it was... But it was almost the Harlequins game.
Yeah.
Subsequently.
Yeah.
Like, before...
That was just a game they would have lost in years gone by.
Yeah. And almost... not content to lose, that's unfair in them, but by their own admission, they weren't consummate pros. They were enjoying life in Dublin, you know, phenomenally talented, and I'm sure cared about it massively, but there was something when you looked at the Munster boys and what they were doing that was very hard not to admire and love, and I just had a... And, like, that was before Leinster had really reached into the rest of the province. Like, it was still South Dublin thing. And in Kildare, I didn't, even though Jamie Heaslip was from Kildare and, you know, a lot of the team were, didn't feel overly part of that club, and there wasn't as much to get on board with. But it was around that time that they really started to show their metal, you know, the kind of steel that was there. And yeah, that was such a turning point. Like, and even in O'Driscoll's career, because the year before he's in Michael Checa's office saying, "I'm 28 years old. I've won a Celtic League like 8 years ago. This is, I may have to go here." Like, that was the turning point in his career, and very quickly, as we all know, you know, Heineken Cup, and then he's a Lion, and then, you know, the rest is history, and he now retires with how many medals, I don't know. But yeah, it's kind of, if you're talking about like sliding doors or seminal moments, like, when you think about it, like, it's like, Jesus, Ireland scored 2 tries in 2 minutes, and otherwise, is the Rod Strafford goal? Like, you know, and Tony Ward on commentary is saying, Wales at their best are better than Ireland.
I took note of that actually as well, yeah.
And you look at the context, these are the Grand Slam champions of 08. They're going to beat Ireland in a World Cup quarterfinal in 2011. Like, I'm sure Wales look at Ireland and think, you lads are just so deluded. Like, okay, you have a platform at club level to win everything, but when it comes down to it in the big games, we tend to beat you. This was definitely an exception to that. The sliding doors moment here is that generation, and more so the Leinster lads. Like, who knows if they'd lost that Grand Slam game, how that would have fed into Leinster's Heineken Cup season.
Hugely. It would have fed in massive. You see the levels of joy. If you're
Munster might have won a Heineken Cup if that was the case.
Potentially. Well, who knows? Yeah, yeah. But we could have been looking at that generation as the great underachievers.
Yeah.
The Leinster boys would have been labelled with the fancy Dans who, when, you know, take the tries O'Driscoll scored, like a metre out, the tackles you talked about. That would have all been forgotten and it would have been blonde flowing locks.
Yes.
Never did it when it counted. And that day in Cardiff turned that in its head. It transformed the CV of all those players and it probably propelled them on to do great things over the next few years. So in terms of the importance of this, obviously Grand Slam is amazing, but actually in a grim sort of way, sliding doors moment, you'd love to have seen what might have happened if Stephen Jones makes that penalty.
Yeah.
The like, careers of those Leinster players, what happens?
On the penalty, actually, and there's one thing I wanted to bring up. First half of the game, and I'm wondering how much of a factor was the roof that day. First half of the game, he had a penalty from 49 metres.
Yeah.
Exactly the same distance, literally just to the other side of the halfway line if you go into the second half. He had, I would say, 6-7 metres on it in terms of distance.
Yeah.
You go 2 metres to the right where he's going back into the other post. Exact same distance, end of the match. Now, I know end of the match, there might be fatigue, the pressure of it and stuff like that. But he's kicking that 6-7 metres short. Roof was open that day.
Mm.
Was there wind?
I wonder, yeah.
You know, how much of a decision when you actually look back in hindsight could having the roof closed have made on that?
I think we can all agree that Gavin Henson going for that from 57 metres out is one of the most stupid calls of all time.
He had a huge boot.
Entitled to. Yeah. No, I'm completely using hindsight here and saying that he came up like 5 to 10 metres short.
And another one.
You went to church after every game.
Can we play that? I actually didn't order it. It's not there.
It's on YouTube.
Is it?
Yeah.
Another bit I just want to throw in here as well. While Tommy's digging that out maybe or something like that. But the penalties Ireland conceded to let Wales back into it were atrocious.
It's shocking. So many stupid things happened in the second half.
So Ireland were 14-6 up. Wales kick off, or it's off a line out. It's not back to Mike Phillips. He knocks on into the hands of Matthew Rees.
Yeah.
Should have been an Ireland penalty for offside. In the end, Wayne Barnes just calls a knock-on and one of the Irish players obviously gives him a bit of lip saying that should be a penalty, turns it over from a scrum to a penalty to Wales. They kick it over for 3 points. And then Jamie Heaslip gives away one, just taking out a lifter in the lineup.
You know what he's doing.
They're also young.
Two absolutely scandalous penalties to give away.
Am I overstating my sliding doors moment? This actually could have been...
No, because I was going to go for the same thing. I don't think you win 6-5 against Harlequins with that sort of ghost following your every step, because that's what it would have become. And I don't think you win the final, because that was also a close game. I still think they hammer Munster, because they're a better team than Munster, and they're also carrying those scars as well, the Munster players. Perhaps a little less so, because they've got their European Cup medals. But no, I was going to go for that exact same sliding moment. Okay, we're going to pause this week's podcast for just a moment, because Brian O'Driscoll was speaking to Nathan on Thursday's Off the Ball about his memories from this very game.
Just before we let you go, this week on the Classic Game Club, Owen and Joe and Neil were looking back and watching the full 80 minutes of 09 Grand Slam game against Wales, and we're just talking about the differences in a decade in the game of rugby and how much kicking there was in that game compared to now, where probably 2-3 times as many kicks, whereas now it feels like there's a lot of kicking. I don't know when the last time you watched it was, probably the year of. When you watch rugby now, does it feel like a very different sport to what it was even in 2009?
I watched the Heineken Cup final in 2011 against Northampton with Dylan Hartley for BT about 2 months ago. Don't know how he agreed to it, but but looking at it, it was like a different sport.
What way?
You know, when we look and laugh at rugby BO, that's us in a few years' time, where, you know, it was fast and frenetic, but you know, you didn't have the deception you have. You didn't have the pods. It was a simpler game. But that said, I know that, you know, Leinster still look at at some of our backline plays that we did back at that era because of lines of running. So that doesn't change. Just the systems and the setups of trying to break down defences, because that's the real improvement. Defences are so hard to break down now that you've got to think your way through it, whereas before it was almost waiting for someone to make a mistake and then you'd capitalise on it through bludgeon or through footwork. I think now you expect and need a little bit more than that. So, it's funny watching it back. It seems like a world ago.
Brian O'Driscoll there, chatting to Nathan on Thursday night's Off the Ball. The full piece available, of course, on youtube.com/offtheball. For now, though, let's get back to the Classic Game Club. Which brings us nicely on to our final point, which is, was this match over or underrated? I'm going to start off and say it was overrated. As a game, poor spectacle. What is it, half an hour or more until Stephen Jones scores.
But then I'd forgotten, by the way, there was no score in the game until 33 minutes.
Yeah.
By that logic, Ireland, Romania and Italian 90 is overrated. So well, that was a shocker of a game.
I think that because of the ending of the game, we all reflect on this match as this incredible thing. Oh my God, the drama. But actually, for 30-something minutes, that little moment was about correctly rated. The rest of the game is overrated because we judge the rest of the game by those last few moments. And I don't think...
But you're never bored. Because of what's on the line in the moment when you're watching going to be bored watching it. You're going to be incredibly tense and nervous.
For sure, but I don't think we've underrated it. I think that, like, it was our first Grand Slam since 1948. It was probably viewed as one of the sporting moments of that decade, if not the century so far. I think it's got all the credit it deserves, and I think as a match it was actually not great, so therefore it falls into the overrated category. Final word to you guys, though.
I'm saying underrated.
I need to know, how is it rated to judge if it's been over or under? Like, we watched it knowing the result. We watched it without any tension, so, you know, like, that's, it's an unbelievable game, because when I watched it in 09, you kind of don't breathe for 80 minutes. Every little kick, every moment is huge. As a, like, spectacle of, hey, you know, watch the French in full flow, 1980s.
It wasn't that.
Obviously, it's not that. So it's not about that.
Over, under? We need an answer, Joe.
It's underrated. It's overrated. I found the...
it's adequately rated. Like,
what is the rating? Is it 7 out of 10? I will say this. In terms of a spectacle, the rugby was stodgier than I remember, and that kicking statistic is incredible.
Yeah.
So... actually, rugby is much better to watch now, which surprised me. Because I thought maybe defences were less on top back then. It might be a bit looser.
Yeah.
And defences were on top.
Only two players on the pitch carried the ball more than 10 times.
Yeah, Darcy's early break. But, like, I was amazed at how much defences were on top here. So, as a spectacle, it wasn't great. But, obviously...
So, you've refused to give us an answer. That's fine. That's okay.
I rated adequately.
Rated adequately. Great. I think what we can all agree on is that...
I want to change that question at the end of this.
Okay, we can maybe change. I think as a final note, we can all agree that Tom McGurk and Ryan Nugent were savagely underrated and two of the finest broadcasters we've ever had. Joe Malloy, thank you very much for joining us.
I agree with that today. Wholeheartedly. I'd bring him back.
Neil Tracy, thank you.
Cheers.
More from the Classic Game Club next week. You can tweet us at Off the Ball if you've got any suggestions, and previous episodes are available now on youtube.com/offtheball. Chat to you later.